welcome to another episode of Bringing Design Closer. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm a service designer and I'm the founder of This Is HCD and the CEO of thisisdoing.com, where we provide live online design and innovation classes, providing training for people in the design and change-making space. Now, today in the show, we have René Albrecht-Mallinger, a lead design researcher at one of my favorite design studios, Global Goods Studio in Chicago. Now, we chat about the intersectionality of René's previous career as a middle school and high school teacher, and now as a design researcher primarily focused on the governmental and societal work that they do at Greater Goods Studio. Now, what pieces René has felt that sets them up for success, so pulls across into the design research role they have, and set them up for success while working in complexity on a day-to-day basis. What comes out in the conversation was the formal education that René received as a teacher has better prepared her for handling potentially trauma-inducing situations whilst researching, something many, if any, design educators cover. Psychological safety when researching, folks. It's an important one. This is a great conversation. Let's jump straight into it. René Albrecht-Mallinger. Am I saying that right?
You sure are.
I got it right the second time. Listen, I'm delighted to welcome you to Bring Design Closer. Maybe start off and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Absolutely. I am a lead design researcher at Greater Good Studio, which means that I help to manage teams and learn from people who are at the center of the problems that groups are trying to solve. And at Greater Good, all of the problems that we are trying to solve are related to social impact.
Nice. And for the eagle-eared and eagle-eyed, should I say, listeners of Bringing Design Closer and This Is HCD, you might connect Greater Good Studio. We spoke recently to George A., and René works alongside George at Greater Good Studio. So I'm delighted to sort of continue the theme of Chicago Design Research, Greater Good Studio, and George A. into the podcast. So how long have you been working at Greater Good Studio?
I started there last summer, so a little bit over a year ago.
And before that, and I guess the topic that we're going to be speaking about today is the intersectionality on your previous career as a teacher, where you taught middle school and high school, and how that kind of intersects with your role as a design researcher or design research lead at Greater Good Studio. So tell us, what was it about teaching that got you into teaching in the first place?
So I absolutely never intended to become a teacher. I went to college fully intending to become something like a lawyer.
But collective gasp from the audience.
I know. The issue is that I love reading, which made the law seem like a great career. But at the end of my time in college, I got drafted into teaching a music theory course and just loved it, like really enjoyed it, felt like I was really good at it. So at the very last minute, pivoted, found an alternative certification program and went to teach middle school and high school math in Chicago.
Right. Okay. So you're teaching math. So I noticed I added an S at the end of the word maths. which is probably going to be contentious for some of the audience. How do we handle this one? Math and math. So I'll say maths, you say math. So you did that for a number of years. You were talking there around middle school. So what's middle school to everyone else outside of America? What ages are those?
So it's usually like 11 to 14. So that's in the US, 6th through 8th grade. And then high school is usually around 14 through 18, so 9th through 12th grade.
A huge developmental leap from an 11-year-old to an 18-year-old.
Yes.
Probably as many shifts as you'd see in a child's or in a human's in life from 11 to 18. They're going through so much. And you did. How many years did you work as a teacher, as a sort of a middle school and a high school teacher?
So I was in education for 8 years.
Wow.
And for the first 5 years was full-time classroom teaching. for the last 3 years. I had a couple of classes as like a sort of a staying clinical practice, but worked as an instructional coach. So like helping other teachers to improve their practice.
Okay. I'm starting to see a development here in terms of where you've, where you're currently at. Now,
yeah.
what do you think are the key attributes of a good teacher, and how does that interrelate with a good design researcher?
So I think there's a ton of overlap. I always say that, honestly, being in a classroom is the closest thing that I've ever come to doing, like the way that human-centered design is supposed to happen. It's iterative. Yeah. You're getting constant feedback. You know, like you're creating
sensory.
Exactly. It's everything, right? But I think a good teacher has got to be a good listener. They've got to be compassionate. They have to take a holistic approach to understanding the people that are in their care. And it involves a lot of creativity, which I think is something that we advance as really, really important in design.
Yeah.
It's like creativity, innovation, being able to work within constraints. And a good teacher can do that.
I'm going to zoom in on one of those key words that you just mentioned there, and it's care. And from speaking to a lot of teachers in my life, just from connecting with the old teachers that I had as well, the best teachers I had in my life were the ones that cared, and they went and you felt supported and nurtured and relatively safe in their presence. I think care in terms of design research and human-centered design is something that comes from a place of compassion. And I'm really interested to see you use those two words interchangeably almost there around being an effective teacher and an effective researcher. What other things do you think that the teaching discipline or the design research discipline can pull from the teaching disciplines?
I think there's so much. I think, so when I was learning in my teacher training, we did a lot of work around qualitative research because that was the program that I was in. And I can absolutely cite tons of examples of like a direct application between the two. But I actually don't think that that's the skill that I use most frequently from my education background into my design research background. I think as a teacher, one of the things that you learn is sort of this constructivist mindset that like knowledge has to be made in the mind of the person who is learning, right? And you develop an appreciation of the amount of work that it takes to be a student. And you learn to build environments and activities and rituals that support the amount of work that it takes for someone to engage in a vulnerable way with you. And as a researcher, you're frequently interfacing with people who are participating in research, who are, you know, informants, participants, whatever you want to call them, that you're asking to step into a pretty vulnerable space and construct knowledge with you. So you're both sharing a moment in which they have to expose themselves and you have to be open to taking in what they are creating. And you are designing that experience.
Absolutely. It's almost like you have to be able to tap into the different frequencies that these people are at to become a lot more effective as a listener and someone who's compassionate to be able to understand and just try and interpret at a very basic level what's going on. One thing that I'm interested to hear your thoughts on is when you're training to become a teacher, is there a sort of a duty of care or process there that sort of teaches the want to, or the emerging teacher to handle complex situations? So working with children who are vulnerable and identifying these different things you need to be aware of as a teacher. Is that something that is taught, or is that something that's just inherently learned to the sixth sense to be able to become aware that something might be off?
I think you start out with, ideally, you start out with some learned knowledge around yeah. it. You know, you take, I assume this is required for everybody, but I had to take, you know, adolescent developmental psychology courses to understand how young people's minds were developing and working. And you do some study and work around, you know, the sorts of things that, that kids are going through, and how to recognize signs of distress and how to respond. Sometimes that can be framed around things like behavior, and sometimes that can be framed around things like academics. But I think a lot of it, you know, you learn these things in a classroom, and then you go into your own classroom and you're confronted with the reality of the situation. And it never looks like it does in a textbook. I think for me, I mean, 8 years is a lot longer than a lot of people stay in classrooms in the United States. And I barely scratched the surface of my own education. You know, like a good teacher, I learned so much from my students by being in those situations with them. And, you know, they were the ones who were instructing me really more than my professors were.
Which is a shift, I guess, you know, from what the way I was kind of educated. There was a lot of kind of king and servant kind of models going on, where like, I'm the knowledge maker, you hopefully you can have the attention to listen and absorb this wonderful gold that's dripping from my tongue. And it definitely felt like that for some teachers, but the ones that were really kind of on it and got it, understood when some students were having an off day, and, you know, some days some kids were really receptive and were able to mix up their style of play. And I know the more modern and the front forward thinking teachers are the ones that when I see walking around, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, they're almost like long lost friends. And it's that different style. I think that, you know, from being a practitioner, you're able to respond to the room and be able to adapt your style to kind of meet people where they're at. That's one of the things that I'm hearing from you as well here when you're talking about those things. In terms of the skills of being able to adapt as a teacher. Okay, so when you're in a classroom with kids who are 11, how have you carried those kind of learnings into the practice of running sessions and running workshops, whatever it is you might be doing on a day-to-day basis at Creator Good Studio?
Planning, honestly. Planning. I think you mentioned like 11, and I taught every grade, 6 through 12. So I taught 11 through 18. And sometimes I taught students who were 11 when they were 11, and then I taught them again when they were 18, and I had at the same time their siblings when they were 15. So, but I'm thinking particularly about that age group. And I think two things that come up first are the importance of clarity and flexibility.
Tell me what you mean by clarity.
Yeah, so young people in particular, especially when an adult is speaking to them, they're going to take what you say literally. You know, like coming in with, like, you have to say what you mean. You have to be gentle, you have to be kind, and you have to say what you mean. Because they're going to take what you say at face
value. Verbatim. Yeah,
exactly. And that can mean everything from giving students written instructions on a worksheet to asking them a question about something that they didn't understand, or getting to the heart of a troubling interaction that you saw in the classroom. Like, you just have to be clear, straightforward, and direct. And I find that that's very similar when you're planning a workshop, or you're interviewing somebody, or you're participating in a co-design session. Just being clear is absolutely so much harder than it sounds.
I know,
it's
yeah.
so critical.
It's also pretty good design principles. And I think there are some of the principles from content design and some of the stuff that Sarah Winters has created. But I mean, that's really, it's interesting to hear that clarity is one. What was the second one that you mentioned there a second ago?
Flexibility.
Okay, so we're talking about, you know, adaptability and flexibility. Tell me what you understand that to mean in the context of teaching.
I mean, it means everything. Like, yeah, everything from, you know, I'm from Chicago. I taught in Chicago. Everything from, there was a ton of snow, and in your first period class, you have two of your, you know, normally 35 students. You had a plan. You got to throw that plan out the window because that's not going to work. You're still responsible for creating a positive experience for those two people.
Yeah.
But your original 35 person plan, that's not going to work. Or there was a fire alarm, or somebody threw a sandwich across the room, you know, like, so there's that kind of flexibility where it's like something unplanned that was outside of anyone's control happened. And that can happen in a research session as well, right? Especially now in pandemic world, right? Someone's internet connection drops. Someone's child starts throwing a fit, and now they have to go take care of their kid. We got to reschedule. The technology fails. But then there's also, you know, I had this beautiful lesson plan worked out. I was so excited and proud of it and was going to really engage my students, and they were going to just fall in love with math today. And they didn't. That happened more often than my intention, right? So being able to adapt as a researcher to the needs of the situation, and not being attached to my plan, which is hard.
And the resilience to come back up and when you're knocked down and go again. And I can see a lot of similarities and a lot of crossover. But in terms of the work that you do at Greater Good Studio and the research, because you're primarily working in the social space and governmental space as well. Some of those attributes you talk about, being flexible and being clear and direct, I can see straight away working with social issues and governmental clients. They would appreciate that stuff. But in terms of the actual going down into the craft of doing design research and conducting sort of, say, evaluative or generative type, you know, research that you're doing on an ongoing basis, what are the attributes, and lesser in the skills, but more the attributes that you carry forward into those sessions? And the bit that I'm talking, kind of hoping to get into a little bit more, is the compassionate side of things. What are your thoughts?
I think in any space, whether it's social impact or not, as a design researcher, and this is my personal philosophy, not everybody has to subscribe to it, but as a design researcher and as somebody who's practicing human-centered design, I've signed up to be the advocate for the stakeholders who aren't in the room. That's what my job is. That's why I go out and conduct any kind of research, is to bring people who are not in the room into the conversation, and to elevate the voices of, the folks that for one reason or another, the people who are making decisions aren't accessing. And that is something that I think as a teacher, it's like, it is your job to support them. It isn't about, it isn't about metrics. It isn't about profit. It isn't about, you know, all of the things that I think are easy to get caught up in. When you are presented with a room full of students, like all the other stuff falls away, right?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, the students will sure let you know that you have other priorities, right? And so as a researcher, like, you're responsible for maintaining that sense of care and that, I don't know, first things first mindset that I think just got drilled into me day after day by being with students. Training. Yeah.
Some of my friends who are teachers, I know they're incredibly patient people, and they'd be able to just repeat themselves and trying to find that position that the student can understand. What I'm trying to get to is in the next level of thinking of is just more like a job, and this is more of a, you're bringing the person along on the journey, and you want to create a space that is safe for them to grow and nurture. I don't know how to articulate it into a question right now at the moment. So I was speaking yesterday with Rachel Dykus, who I know has done some work with Greater Good Studio. And we spoke about the level of care that should, in theory, be carried into every research session, especially when you look through a trauma-informed lens, okay? What I'm kind of interested to get your thoughts on is, and I can tell already from speaking with you that you're probably a very talented teacher, okay? You speak about things that, you know, I would have liked to have been taught maths from you, for instance, because I know that you probably break things down into easier ways to understand some complex situations. But going back to the care piece, I'm really interested to see what level of care you feel a good design researcher should possess. And what are those things? If you've got any sort of anecdotal stories, I'd love to hear them.
Absolutely. I feel like every research session that I have been in is an anecdote about care. Even outside of social sector, like really and truly, what I've created the environment to do when I'm facilitating sessions is I've created an environment where people can tell me about the best and worst things related to the topic we're talking about. And, you know, in my past research life, that might have been related to finance, you know, and in my current life, that might be related to health or education. But they're still talking about the best and worst. And that means a few things, right? That means that, like you said, I'm creating safety so that people can share the things that represent those highs and lows, and so that they can communicate with me about them, because I don't know what they are. Like, that's why I showed up. And I'm frequently putting people in a position where they have to speak with confidence and the knowledge that they are expert in something that I am showing up naive about. If I already knew, I wouldn't be asking you, right? So they have to be teaching me. And that's an enormous amount of responsibility to put somebody in.
Yeah.
A project that I was working on fairly recently was actually a really hard project. We were working to develop communication tools for cancer diagnosis. And the cancers that we were working on specifically were typically found late stage. And as a design researcher, you do primary research. You talk to people who are in those situations. So we conducted research sessions and asked people to talk to us about being diagnosed with late stage cancer. And we talked to their caregivers and family members, and they told us about what that was like. And those conversations were absolutely incredible and challenging. And it required us as researchers to have a sense of, I feel like our duty of care there was not simply to care about the person or to care about the data or to care about the project. A lot of times when we're writing these discussion guides, protocols, facilitation guides, whatever you want to call them, it's like, man, I want this person to leave this session feeling really good and excited about the project. Well, that's not an appropriate goal. That's absolutely not an appropriate goal for the conversation that I just had, where somebody talked me through
Potentially
one of the worst experiences that many of us will ever face.
Yeah.
Right. What I have to do is I have to set a different goal. I have to look at what my commitment is to this person and to the story that they told me. And I have to communicate that commitment to them so that this engagement was meaningful to that person that I'm talking to, and so that they feel that their action, that what they've shared with me, that what they've taught me is meaningful and will make a difference. And then I actually have to deliver on it, because that's the other part of the duty of care, right? It's not just about creating somebody's perception. That's important, right? I can't just go and make a difference and leave everybody that I talked to or worked with like feeling crummy in the wake of our conversation, feeling hurt, feeling wounded, feeling used, because that's not it either. Like, both sides of that matter, how they feel throughout the process, their understanding of what it is that we're doing, the way that we're connecting throughout it, all of that matters. And then I have to go and take that and deliver and be that person in the room who's communicating and creating and
absolutely.
Yeah.
And those kind of conversations that you're having there, which are requiring people to be vulnerable and open, they can take their toll on the design researcher as well, or the researcher, whatever you want to call them. You know, the skills that you learned whilst training to be a teacher, it sounds like there's some foundational things that exist within that world that don't exist in design education world. So I'm seeing a crossover here in terms of, like, you would be better supported from your grounding in teaching than you would if you'd have been elevated through design research, where you might have learned how to more focus on prototyping or ideation, whatever it is that happens in design school these days. But they don't have the psychological or the the foundations that you had whilst training to become a teacher. Am I right in saying that? Is that something that you lean on a little bit more, you know, being aware of those situations when you're teaching, and then that crossover when you're being more aware as a design researcher? Does that set you up for success?
I absolutely think so. I mean, I got to see both sides of the coin. Like, I did go to design school and I got all of the classes in prototyping and all of that. But we didn't spend a ton of time talking about the sort of capacities that you have to build in yourself as a design researcher.
It's really scary.
Because it is.
Yeah.
And you don't know what type of conversations you're getting into. I brought up, like, I've done work in finance before, right? You expect those conversations to be very dry. Sometimes they're not. I remember specifically a conversation with someone where we were talking about benefits selection, voluntary benefit selection for independent contractors, very narrow focus. And it was generally, those conversations were what you would expect. And one conversation that I got into with somebody ended in just this very deep interrogation of, I'm worried about my financial health and I'm dependent upon my partner, and it makes me feel like I'm not living in line with my values.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just say, well, this is something that only social sector designers have to worry about.
Yeah.
All design researchers have to worry about that.
Absolutely. For the finance sector, a lot of the research that I've done in that space, money's about control and power and structures like that. So I've had people become quite upset in research sessions whilst conducting research in that space. So you're right. But I guess, looking at you as a whole, and you as you've got two or three different degrees or experience in those spaces, if you were to redesign or design a course that was fundamental to design research, Okay, so it was focused on design research. What would you take from both worlds and build this super course? What would that look like?
I think pedagogy is critical. So pedagogy being the you know, art or science of how you teach people and how they learn. I would love
for designers.
For designers.
Absolutely.
Because you are, I mean, communicating with participants, communicating with your team, communicating with clients, like it's absolutely critical.
It's huge.
I also think that an understanding of psychology is, I draw on that a lot. And I have throughout my practice. You also referenced this idea of the effect of research on the researcher. The impact. I feel like researchers ought to be in therapy. Like this is, there's if you're not aware of those impacts, and if you're not prepared to be aware of those impacts, which is something I think our educations can help us to do, then you are likely to walk into a research session and you're more likely to do harm.
Absolutely.
Because you're not aware of everything that's going on inside you.
Yeah.
You can't be fully present for the person that you've asked to show up for you.
Yeah.
So I feel like all of those things, there are a lot of things that the practice of teaching will do for you. Like if anything's going to teach you to not be attached to your work, it is the critique of a 35 hungry 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
They will
with short attention spans.
Your ego. Oh my God.
Yeah.
They do not care. They're like, oh, this critique isn't personal. It's about your work. 14-year-olds, that critique is personal.
Yeah. They go for you.
Yeah. But that I feel like maybe slightly lower in priority than those other things.
Yeah. Well, look, there's lots we can speak about and continue to speak about, but we're coming towards the end of the episode. Renee, it's been fantastic speaking with you and learning more around, as you said, the intersectionality between teaching and design research. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, but if people want to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way for people to do that?
Yeah, best way to do that is probably Twitter or email. Email, I'm Renee, R-E-N-E-E at greatergoodstudio.com.
Nice.
And
you're on LinkedIn as well.
I'm on LinkedIn, Renee Albrecht Mellinger. I'm the only one.
Yeah, I saw that when I Googled you earlier on. I was like,
yes,
oh, definitely.
My
Renee.
Name is SEO proof. You will find like the other four members of my immediate family, but that's it.
Ah, very good. Well, look, I'll throw a link to those in the show notes. Renee, thank you so much for your time. It's great speaking with you.
Wonderful to speak to you. Thank you so much, Jerry.
So there you have it. That's all for this episode of Bringing Design Closer. If you like this episode, feel free to visit thisishcd.com, where you can access our back catalogue of over 100 episodes, with episodes related to service design, product management, design research, and much, much more. Now, if you're interested in design and innovation training, feel free to check out our business, thisisdoing.com, where you can join online classrooms and learn from the world's best design and innovation leaders. Join the This Is HCD newsletter, where you'll receive updates from the network. And also, if you're interested, apply to join the Slack community on thisishcd.com. Stay safe, and until next time, take care.